This episode of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast is presented by Empirica. That's Empirica, E-M-P-I-R-I-K-A. Empirica exists to amplify your brand's growth, a digital partner to the ambitious, the creative engine launching brands and igniting growth, the unagency where relationships matter, not transactions. Let's connect at empiricamedia.com. That's empiricamedia.com. Let's get the show started.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Gugat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
Hi, and welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, John Peters. And on this episode, we speak to Matt Powell, Vice President and Senior Industry Advisor for the NPD Sports Group. With over 40 years of experience in the retail and research industries, Matt has counseled many of the world's largest brands and retailers like Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, Foot Locker, Walmart, and everything in between. The NPD Group is one of the world's largest research firms and a leader in sports data. Matt shared stats on industry bright spots despite COVID-19, including brands doing well like Hoka One One and On Running. He also shared his thoughts on the future of retail and how brands are stepping up and responding to social injustices in America today. I've been fortunate enough to know Matt for several years, get into several Twitter debates with him, and been proven wrong by his research. Matt is one of the brightest and most humble executives I know in the sports industry today. We hope you enjoy this industry update from Matt Powell, and be sure to tweet your thoughts directly to him at @NPDMattPowell and check out his blog, Sneakernomics. Let's get to the interview. Matt Powell, where are you at today?
Today I am in my home in Maine, looking out at the beautiful spring day. It's spring still here. We don't get to summer for a bit, but the weather's been spectacular.
Yeah. And you've had enough time. I think you said before we hopped on that you're 10 weeks inside due to the quarantine and COVID. And, you know, there seems to be so much bad news today and just constant negativity and craziness, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But within our industry, it sounds like there are at least some positive bright spots and stories despite COVID wrecking GDP growth. Can you talk a little bit about that and a little bit, maybe share some examples?
Sure. So NPD is a global market research firm, and we cover 20 different industries, sport being one of them. And we have industry experts who cover each of the businesses, sometimes more than one. And when we look across the industry, there's just some crazy numbers. Anything to do with home office businesses are fabulous. 3 or 4 weeks ago, we set a record week in PC sales for the week. People from home, their old computer isn't fast enough, and so they go out and buy a computer. People are buying printers, cameras, so they can do Zoom meetings like this. So that business is great. Anything around comfort and coziness. So in home appliances, pizza ovens, bread makers, the business is off the chart. The toy business is really good because you got all these kids who are home and bored and parents trying to keep them occupied. You can't buy a puzzle today anywhere in the United States. In the beauty business, it's really moved around. At first it was all makeup, but because people were doing these and they wanted to look good. And then they got bored with that, and they went into skincare and hair care because people couldn't go to the spa and get their treatments and so forth. So they were doing it for themselves. Now it's all about eye makeup. Lipstick business is terrible. Why? Because you've got a mask on, and you don't need lipstick if you're wearing a mask. So there's some crazy stuff in our business. The cycling business is absolutely off the chain right now. Home fitness is really, really good because obviously people can't or won't go to the gym. You can't buy a kettlebell. There was an article in the New York Times this morning about how you can't buy a kettlebell in the United States right now. The basketball business is really good. Basketball hoop systems and balls are really good. A lot of cities shut down their parks. They actually took the hoops off of the backboards in the parks so the kids wouldn't hang out there. And so that's a piece of it. And then I think it's also about homeschool recess and what sport can my kid play by himself or herself? Well, you can always go out in the driveway and shoot hoops. So there are some businesses that are great. The sneaker business is terrible. Through April, the activewear business for the most part was terrible, although sweatpants, which is the work from home uniform, that business has been okay.
Maybe underwear as well, so you don't wear pants.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Underwear and pajamas. People don't want to go to the laundromat, so they're buying new. And the underwear business is very, very good, where the most of the apparel business is terrible. The only footwear business that was any good for March and April were slippers. So just work from home, stay comfy. It's all about those themes.
Are there any like bright signs in and around online business? I've talked to a handful of retailers.
Yeah, absolutely. In April, two-thirds of all athletic shoes sold in April were sold online. And those sales were up about 50% from the previous year. It wasn't enough to offset the losses in brick and mortar, but it certainly was an impressive number. And we think, last year in the United States, about 29% of all sneakers were sold online, which is a very high penetration for any industry. We thought before COVID that it was going to go to 50%, and I think it's going to go to 50, but a lot faster than we thought. Someone said to me the other day, a very smart guy said, we're going to see 5 to 10 years worth of change in 5 to 10 months. And so we aren't going to hold at the 66% online sneaker sales. As more stores open, that number will come down. But, you know, so many people have learned to buy things online that they never would have bought, whether it's food or groceries or sneakers. And I don't think you unlearn those things. I think once you start to establish a behavior, you're not going to walk away from that.
Yeah. Matt, I have a question. How do you see this impacting or potentially impacting the sneaker resale market or gray market? If people aren't allowed to go out on the street or show their shoes or go to these meets, what's the outlay of that?
Yeah, well, initially we don't track that market, but we were hearing that the sales had jumped a little bit initially, I think because people were home and bored and looking for something to do. But Paris business has flattened out. There was a story recently about StockX who said their sneaker sales were flat now, and they've actually tried to get into more businesses like trading cards, baseball cards, to keep their volume up. I think there's also going to be need to reassure the customer that the products they're buying are safe, right? I mean, that they've been sanitized in some way and don't carry the virus. And so now the resellers have to go through yet a whole nother step. I got an email from Goat today advertising a big sale, which says to me their business must not be very good if they're offering product on discount. So I think it's had a negative, maybe short-term early, good impact, and then later not so good.
Hey, Matt, so just on that note, run shoes, at least in 2008, if I'm correct, they saw a spike in the last recession. Gyms have been closed, Peloton's trying to keep everybody at home. Have you seen any run numbers from Brooks or anybody that you can talk about that are positive?
The run numbers are bad, but not as bad as the rest of the market. I think when we come out of this, we're going to see a real change, though, in the way that fashion has gone. For the last 6 years, we have not had a single performance category that was trending positively. Not basketball, not run, not train. It was all about lifestyle. It was all about athleisure. And I think as we come out of this, we're going to see the athleisure business start to flatten out and running potentially pick up. A couple of reasons. I think the consumer is going to be more practical in their purchases. I think they're not going to buy frivolous fashion. So think about dad shoes, which was a thing that happened over the last couple of years. I think they're going to buy products that they can use for more than one purpose. So a running shoe I can wear as sportswear and I can also run in. I think our surveys are showing that people say they're going to exercise more as we come out of the pandemic. That, you know, if you think about the casualties of this pandemic, it's really been people who had pre-existing conditions, overweight, smokers, diabetic, and so forth. And so I think there's going to be a renewed interest on living a healthy lifestyle coming out of this. And then finally, probably the biggest social change that we're going to see is social distancing. And any activity you can do that helps, that you can stay distance from people, is probably a winning category. So running fits into to all of that. And and then we've also had Hoka and On running, really doing very, very well. And both of those brands in April had an increase. Where the market was down 50%, both of those brands actually put up an increase. So I think that propels them further as we come out of this as well.
You had a column a while back that talked about intent of use by the consumer, so buying the shoe and then what it'd be used for. And one of the references to Under Armour, you know, was that people actually intended to use them for that function. Is that an opportunity for Under Armour to double down? I mean, Absolutely. With everything going on?
Absolutely. I felt they were going in the wrong direction, frankly, with their merchandising and their emphasis on performance products. It may turn out to be a plus for them now.
Good. Well, this will be a little bit of a segue, but I'll butcher the quote, but Lauren Michaels from Saturday Night Live has a great quote that says, "I don't tweet for a very simple reason, which is that I drink." So, do you find Twitter to be sobering or intoxicating?
Both. And I'm not trying to equivocate here. I think there are times when, you know, there's been so many uplifting things that have occurred around the George Floyd murder. And it's odd, feels odd to say that, but, you know, there really are just some absolutely remarkable things that are happening. And Twitter is the news source today, right? I mean, it's so much faster than anything else that you could follow. So it's been uplifting from that point of view, the response of companies and the response of some enlightened politicians and the city officials and so forth. On the other hand, there's a lot of stupidity on Twitter, and it's just so frustrating. I don't get into as many fights as I used to. I don't know whether I've scared all the people who want to fight with me away, or they just bite their tongue because they don't want me to block them. I don't know. But I don't seem to get into as many arguments as I used to.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I used to love watching them. and you know, the way I describe Twitter, it's like if you opened up a dumpster and saw rats and cockroaches fighting over content or something. It's truly a dumpster of just stuff.
Absolutely.
That's not true.
And I'm in that dumpster sometimes. So,
well, to your credit, you do stick to the facts. And on that note of Twitter, you know, I think you have, I don't know how many followers now, NPD Mad. Is that the hand? What's the handle?
Say again.
What's your Twitter handle for the listeners?
NPD Matt Powell.
Okay. NPD Matt Powell. Go check his Twitter out. I think you have more followers than I do dollars in my bank account. Pretty large voice in the industry. And I'm dying to ask you, you talk to brands, you know, brands like Adidas, big brands that'll fly you out to do presentations across the country. And you have an influential voice in the industry, right? So
thank you.
My question is, you know, using Drew Brees as an example, not to compare you guys, but, you know, he makes a quote last week, people killed him or roasted him on Twitter. It just feels like in our industry, especially, you know, brands are struggling to even have an open conversation. What are your thoughts on a brand today trying to address all the racial inequality as a brand?
Well, it's really hard. I think that really needs to be the baseline that we think about here, is that racism is so ingrained in our society. I don't know if you read the 1619 project that the New York Times put out, but it really illustrated how deeply ingrained, you know, the mere fact that the Atlanta subway doesn't go out to Buckhead because of racism. It's just mind-boggling. And so it's really hard to do the right thing all the time. And there are just so many ways that you can do the wrong thing, or you have been doing the wrong thing that didn't occur to you. I'm in the middle of reading this book on how to be an anti-racist. And it's just so revealing that behaviors that we think are benign are not so benign. So I'm not trying to make an excuse for the industry. I think in many ways our industry has been more forward than other industries because of who our consumers are, who their primary consumers are. But there's so much work to do. And again, you think you're doing the right thing, and then it turns out you're not doing the right thing somewhere else. And so I have a lot of sympathy for companies today and how hard it is to to take the right path.
Yeah, and just on that note, the three stripe brand Adidas, I think it was today, they you know, initially they came out and made a good effort for a donation and a cause, and then they get crushed because it wasn't enough and the employees started backlash. And then they came out today and I think they 10x the donation and they're doing more with schools and scholarships. I mean, what's your take on that entire situation?
Well, again, I think we're all beginning to really understand how deeply this is ingrained in everything that we do. And I think we're realizing that a simple act, one act is not enough. You've got to live it every day. And I see a lot of humility in the Adidas statement, their realization of a situation that maybe they didn't fully understand and their acceptance of that. And I'm certainly not urging the employees to take their foot off the pedal. I think you want to keep pushing and keep pushing, but at the same time, I think you need to appreciate that it's hard and people need to be given a little bit of space to get there.
This isn't an original thought, but I'd read somewhere where, again, an industry built in many respects on Black culture that hasn't necessarily focused on doing for Black people. And it is that, you know, again, we are in an internet age where how genuine or authentic that messaging can be, how easy it is to be, you know, a critic versus, you know, and I know, you know, these brands have people that are working full time with purpose in mind to do better. It doesn't always, you know, get out that way. So we appreciate you addressing it because it's...
Yeah, I think, you know, I would tell you, I've been around this industry for a long, long time. I have never seen a greater emphasis on inclusivity and diversity, of wanting to do the right thing, of putting your money where your mouth is, of admitting, accepting that you're falling short. I think all of these things are fabulous, and I really applaud the brands for what they're doing. And at the same time, they're not doing enough.
Matt, earlier you mentioned you're reading a book on how to not be a racist. Do you mind mentioning the book by title to our audience?
Yeah, it's called How to Be an Anti-Racist. And the author is Kembe.
Okay.
It's a very, very thoughtful book about, say, his point is it's not appropriate to say I'm not a racist. You have to say I'm an anti-racist. You have to think about doing the exact opposite of what a racist would do in order to do the right thing.
Okay, I'll make sure we put that in the show notes for our listeners.
Yeah, great. We should also link your blog, Matt. I know you do, for our listeners, he has a great blog, Sneakeronomics. How do you say it? What is it on NPD?
Sneakeronomics, yeah.
Yeah. I think
my Twitter followers actually came up with that name. So,
well, speaking of Twitter spats, I got to ask you because we argued about this 5 years ago or something. Pivoting totally just to a different subject. What are your thoughts now on Allbirds and their launch into the run industry? Do you see that?
You know, I think it's really important that they continue to expand their assortment of products. You know, I have a couple of the original shoe, but I didn't really need a new color, so I didn't buy any more of those. And, you know, my son has got a couple of pairs of the tree shoes, but again, he's probably bought all of those that he wants. So I think you've got to keep expanding the assortments out there. And I think, you know, the consumer wants freshness and newness very much. And I think that's a piece of it. So the shoe's gotten good reviews, not as a competitive running shoe, but certainly as a casual running shoe. I think the look is right. And again, if we see this move back to performance running as fashion that I'm feeling like we may be on the cusp of, they could be in a very good place.
Another brand kind of in that vein, and I'll mispronounce it, but I think it's the French brand Veja. Or Veja,
yes.
Veja, yeah. Yeah. Any insights there? Are they, you know?
They've done some good work. They're not. They don't have some of the comfort features that I think we see with Allbirds as an example. Allbirds is a very comfortable, breathable, lightweight shoe to wear. But certainly, their message of sustainability has gone a long way. Meghan Markle loves them, so every time she wears a pair, the Footwear News puts a picture of it up. So. But they're doing some good work. There are several brands out there who are in this space of doing shoes more sustainably and simply.
So Matt, we'll ask you maybe two more questions and get you out of here. One of my questions today is Starbucks shut down 400 stores, a lot more in Canada today. They announced expanding mobile pickup options. Simon backed out of their mall deal. I don't know if you saw that one. And then even before all of this, State of Retail was already over retailed, as you've alluded to several times. Is the mall really going to die this time? It's like a cockroach. It just won't die. Or are we going to see a resurgence? What's your prediction on that?
Well, look, there always are going to be a need for physical stores. People like to touch the product. They like to try it on. People like to go and share community. You think about what an Apple store used to look like, with all the Apple fans hanging around talking to each other about product and so forth. So I don't see us see physical stores going away. But we have too many stores in the United States selling too much of the same stuff. And we've been slowly dealing with this, and we're now going to really rip the Band-Aid off on this one. And CoreSight Research came out this week and said that we're going to close 25,000 doors this year. 25,000. 9,000 was what we closed last year, and that was an all-time record. These are gross closures, not net closures. But I don't see a lot of people opening doors over the next year anyway. And Jan Niffen this morning came out and said that a third of the malls are going to close, 300 malls. If a big anchor goes out of a mall and it's a marginal mall to begin with, who's going to take that space? And if you don't have an anchor, you don't have a mall anymore. So we really need this. This needs to happen, but it's going to be very, very painful. Yeah. A lot of people are going to be permanently out of work because of this.
Yeah, and I've kind of been making the analogy, at least the past year or two, around over-retailed and is the same analogy for gyms. And it just seems like that's coming true. And 24-Hour Fitness, I think, is the one who filed for bankruptcy. Gold's Gym is another one. Any thoughts? Do you guys have any data on the gym closures? Do you cover that at all?
No, I just know what I read in the paper. But no, we don't track gym sales.
Do you think people, or just your opinion, are going to come back next to sweaty people and dumbbells and a traditional gym?
Well, I think, first of all, they won't be allowed to by law, right? The executive orders that are coming out by these governors are saying, only X number of people per square foot. So that automatically limits it. I think the gyms will have to reassure their customers that the gym is safe and clean. And that means if you use a treadmill, somebody has to wipe that whole treadmill down before the next person can use it. That's going to slow things down. We're hearing that gyms that have opened you're going by appointment. You're going for a fixed time. There can only be so many people inside a studio or in the machine room. I'm seeing it here in Maine, where they're bringing a lot of activities outside. I went by a club the other day and they had all their spin bikes out in the parking lot. The place where my wife does Zumba is offering outdoor Zumba classes. So, but I live in Maine. You can only do that about 4 months of the year. So that's not a long-term solution for anybody. But I think it's going to change. And I think so much of, we have no idea how things are going to change. Every day I'm amazed at another thing that's happened. Here in Portland, they've closed several streets so that restaurants can bring their tables out into the street and have a larger outdoor presence. We're able to buy liquor takeaway today. You couldn't have done that 3 months ago. So everything's changing right before our eyes.
Yeah. And Matt, maybe last question for you and we'll let you go. What is the overall sentiment? You speak to probably 300 executives a month or something. What is the overall sentiment from the brands and CEOs you're talking to on a regular basis about going forward?
I think everybody's cautiously optimistic. The early stores that have opened have been really mixed. Some stores have done very well. Some stores that people seem to be reluctant to go to. Our surveys show that consumers are concerned about going back into malls. They are much more inclined to go into freestanding units where they can, they're closer to their car. They're not as many people, not as enclosed. So I think it's going to take a while. We look at what happens in China. You know, they're back at full employment. They're close to it. But people aren't shopping. People are saving. People are stocking up on whatever essentials mean to them in fear that this comes back or something else comes up in a few years. And then you got 20 million people out of work. And they're not all going to go back tomorrow. So we've got a long slog to pull out of this. And we think it's going to be very jagged that, you know, we're going to have some good looks and then we're going to take a step back. And it, God forbid there's a second wave of this. If that comes on, it could really be much, much worse than what we're thinking is going to be right now.
Yeah. Well, we will surely be, if there's a second wave, doing a lot more podcasting. So hopefully we can bring you back on some of these, Matt, and really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah, great to do it. Good to see you guys. Stay safe.
Thanks, Matt.
You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, play hard or at least look good doing it.